The date is March 30th, 1990, and we're watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Michelangelo to my Raphael.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
I mean, I'm thinking maybe I should have conferred with you ahead of time to see if there was a turtle of preference, but that's what I went for.
I mean, I'm pretty partial to
fun
Leonardo.
Pizza loving dude. Yeah,
I'm a Leonardo, okay. Raphael guy. Michelangelo is probably my third. Donatello, of course, dead last.
Damn, dude.
Wait, which is funny because I was a Donatello guy. So
really,
yeah. Wow.
Well, as you can hear, there is another voice on the line today.
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler alert. But the easiest guest I can book because he lives in my goddamn basement. My son, Chris Wells.
Yo, yo, yo. What up?
Right on. Welcome back, Chris. So this week, we're looking back at March 1990, when the movies in theaters were Pretty Woman, Lord of the Flies, Joe vs. the Volcano, Nuns on the Run, and of course, our movie for today, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie, which earned $202 million on a $13.5 million budget. Now, I will also say, by comparison, both sequels had a $25 and a $21 million budget. I know that we're not supposed to talk about the second sequel, but it did have, like, almost twice the budget. And the Michael Bay reboot had between $125 and $150 million.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Those are all interesting, but pale into comparison to the question in my mind, which is, what is Nuns on the Run? Is this a
Nuns
movie?
On the Run.
Is this a movie that either of you has seen, and can you explain?
It is a movie that has Robbie Coltrane and Eric Idle in it, I believe. I believe those are the two stars of it, and they go into hiding at a nunnery, posing as nuns. They are like thieves that are wanted by the cops. It's kind of sister act with a couple of British dudes.
Say, okay,
I also love the word nunnery.
Nunnery.
It's so like, silly.
Huh. Well, there you go. Thank you, Sean. But still trying to wrap my head around this movie. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead. So if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the taglines that appear on the poster for this movie are, I have seven of them, sort of. The first one is, this ain't no cartoon. And the second one is, hey, dude, this is no cartoon.
Okay.
They had to get one grammatically correct version out there, I guess.
Yep. The third and fourth ones, we've got lean, green, and on the screen.
That's
and the
good.
Fourth one is, they're mean, green, and on the screen.
Huh.
I like lean better.
Yeah?
Yeah, lean, green, on the screen. It's very short and to the point. It's better. Yeah, the other one seems more like a mouth. Plus, they're not mean.
Yeah, they're not mean.
They're party dudes and whatnot.
Whatnot. Well, okay, let's bring it home with the last three. These ones aren't repetitive like the other ones. The fifth one is, all fathers care for their sons.
It's a little heavy for
such
a lighthearted film.
Well, that gets across the independent film aspect of this, because this movie is technically an independent movie.
Really?
And it was the highest grossing independent movie until Blair Witch Project. I mean, that's why Elias Kotis is in it, because, I mean, he's the independent movie king. But, yeah, it's considered an independent movie because no major studio wanted to touch a toy slash comic book slash cartoon adaptation after the abysmal Masters of the Universe a few years earlier.
That's hilarious, because I was literally thinking to myself throughout the whole movie, I'm like, who the fuck ever greenlit a live action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie with absolutely no effects? They're all practical, done in camera. Like, there's no CGI, of course it was, like, probably before CGI, but there's, like, no after effects or anything. And the fact that this movie was made is crazy to me. So that makes more sense that it's an independent film.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see easily that if it had failed, it would be, you know, it would be on the level of, like, He-Man or all these, like, I'm thinking of, like, current day B superhero movies, like Defendor with Woody Harrelson, oh, yeah. Or like Super, yeah, with Rainn Wilson. Like,
well, I mean, there was also Super Mario Brothers back Mario in the day. Brothers, I mean,
yeah. I like Super too.
Let's get these last two taglines out of the way, because of course for this movie they are the best ones. Number 6, Cowabunga dudes.
Which, first of all, before we get too far ahead of it, Mikey is my favorite.
Okay,
I've always considered myself a party dude.
Okay, well, right on. And then finally, number 7, bringing it home strong. You could probably almost guess this one.
Heroes in a Half Shell.
Heroes, yeah, in a Half Shell is number 7. Yeah. No turtle power on the end of that, but Heroes in a Half Shell, indeed. But they may not be the best descriptions of this movie, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
This is going to be a long one.
You only have 60 seconds.
Yeah, no.
No, we've added 60 seconds.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
As New York City is ravaged by a series of thefts by a group known as the Foot Clan, local news reporter April O'Neil finds herself in the wrong place at the wrong time when she comes upon a group of criminals mid-criminaling. Lucky for April, 4 anthropomorphic turtles with ninja skills come to her rescue and take the thugs out. Our shelled heroes Leonardo, Donatello, Michelangelo, and Raphael celebrate their victory on the way back to their sewer lair. Raphael is distressed by the loss of a sai he irresponsibly threw at a streetlight. Even though the turtles' father/sensei Master Splinter, who is an anthropomorphic rat, advises Raphael to forget the sai, our cool but rude turtle dude decides to go it alone and get his sai back. In the process, he roughs up some purse snatchers, goes one-on-one with sports-based superhero Casey Jones, and eventually kicks some Foot Clan ass to save April again. Unfortunately for Raph, after saving the news reporter, he decides the safest thing to do is to bring her back to the lair, and he unknowingly leads the Foot Clan to their secret hideout, where they later break in and capture Splinter. While Splinter is being held hostage and tortured at the will of the Shredder, the leader of the Foot Clan, the Turtles move into April's apartment, where the Foot find them then again, beat Raphael senseless, and burn down April's father's antique store. With the Foot after them, April, Casey, and the Turtles run to a farm where they lick their wounds, get to know each other better, and make a plan to get Splinter back after he astral projects himself into a campfire. With a renewed sense of vigor, the Turtle team returns to New York, where they get their revenge on the Foot Clan, save Splinter, and come face-to-face with the Shredder, who turns out to be Oroko Sucky, the murderer of Splinter's former owner, Hamato Yoshi. Shredder masterfully hands the Turtles an old-school beatdown, but after realizing Splinter is the one responsible for him spending the rest of his life in a tin helmet, he gives up his tactical advantage and gets thrown into a garbage truck where he is presumed dead. With their father back and victory won, it's all high fives and cowabungas as turtle power rings throughout the Big Apple. That's your 60-second synopsis.
Nice.
I left out the whole part about that Danny kid.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a good
The plot. Judas. The Judas of the movie.
Yeah. I enjoy... It's a good plot for our turtle boys. And honestly, I was thinking back on it while you were initially reading it. I think it's honestly set the mold for every subsequent turtle movie, where it's just Leonardo coming to terms with his leadership and Raphael being edgy and going out on alone until he realizes that he can't do it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's true. Like, well, maybe we'll talk about it. But like, no, I'll just say it now. I was watching this movie and kind of realizing that the Ninja Turtles movies and reboots kind of suffer from the same thing that I also used to hate about, like, the Batman movie reboots, where it's like you had to rehash the same thing every time. And it's like the turtles do that as well. And like you said, Leonardo is always like, oh, I need to be the leader. I need to step up. And Raphael's like, fuck you guys. I'm a loner, lone wolf all the way. And then, like, Michelangelo and Donatello always just kind of get the shaft. Like, they never really get to do anything other than, I guess, like, the third movie, which is, like, the movie we don't speak its name. But Mikey at least has kind of a more prominent story there.
Well, what I want to know is why the turtles keep getting taller. Because in the cartoon slash comic, they're like 3 to 4 feet tall. In this, they're like 5.5 to 6 feet tall. And then they're like, what, like 9 feet tall in the fucking Michael Bay movies? Like,
they're pretty big.
You know, eventually we're going to have like King Kong sized turtles.
Yeah, if you extrapolate.
Yeah.
Fuck. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of the thing I didn't. Well, there's lots I didn't like about the Michael Bay Turtles movies, but yeah. I didn't like that they had to. He had to go the added route of like they're all different types of turtles, so that yeah. to explain like their size differences or whatever. I yeah. don't know. Stupid.
I will say not that this is the movie we're talking about, but the second Michael Bay Turtles movie is very good because it was just kind of like a fuck it, let's do it. Which yeah. this movie,
yeah, let's
also
make a Technodrome. Let's fucking yeah.
And this movie also, it's like yeah, fuck it, I. If this movie had been made 10 years later, Shredder would have not looked like Shredder. They would yeah. have put him in some weird-ass metal suit. The fact that they put him in, like, a purple top and those awesome spikes, he looks cool as hell, and I'm so glad that they just stuck faithful to it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this this movie's great. Okay. I gotta say it.
Well, yeah, let's talk about the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now, you ended your 60-second synopsis with saying that we're screaming out turtle power at the end of the movie. No, we're screaming out T-U-R-T-L-E power. And that is one of my big memories of this movie. You know, the fact that I'm reading now that this movie, they were worried about what its success would be, that no studio wanted to buy it.
Yeah.
I was so excited for this movie. And I had the soundtrack. You could get the cassette tape on different colors. So I had the Donatello one because, you know, so I had the purple cassette tape.
Nerd.
And I remember I had this sticker book. And it was like baseball cards in a way. You go and you buy these packs of stickers, and you're trying to get a complete set to be able to fill out all the spots in this sticker book where you're building collages on certain pages. It's like a sticker by number book. And
but
like
they
just
came in randomized sticker packages
yeah.
that.
Yeah,
that's
so you would trade for them and everything like that. Whoa, so that's I had that. I had the novelization of this. I had the comic book adaptation. I was so excited about this movie.
Well, I mean like what?
12-year-old Sean was just had a hard on for this movie.
Yeah, because you're like, yeah, you're a little older than me, like maybe 5 or 6 years older than me. So I remember growing up and I was like the prime candidate of Ninja Turtles. Like I was when the 1990s TV series came on. Or the, like the 80s, late 80s here. I would have been like 4 years old. And like I remember, like I just remember everything. I had everything Ninja Turtles, Ninja Turtle sleeping bag, Ninja Turtle pillows, Ninja Turtle blankets, all the clothes, all the toys, like all the VHS tapes. I even had, there's this like fake Ninja Turtles arena music tour that they did. And,
oh, yeah,
and
I
had
that
cassette
yeah.
and I listened to it. I also, as an adult, bought it later on iTunes because I was like, if it's on iTunes, I must have it now. But still, like, I listened to this thing, like, over and over. And I just remember,
do the Bartman.
For a kid my age,
that album too.
A kid my age in the early 90s, like, Ninja Turtles was everything.
Oh, it was for me, too. Because if you have to realize that, like, the cartoon predates this.
Yeah, okay.
So I was a fan of the cartoon. I had the sewer set. I had all the turtles. I had large size turtles. I had other things going on when it came to like my bedding.
Yeah.
But I was all in when it came to turtles. I mean, yeah.
And I remember like thinking when Secret of the Ooze came out, it was those, and they're really hard to find now, but those, the action figures that they made that were like rubberized for Secret of the Ooze at the time were so cool. Chris, what about, like, because you're obviously way younger than us, but, like, after the 90s cartoon ends, I think you have to wait until, like, the 2003 for, like, another cartoon series to show up, but.
Yeah, and the TMNT animated movie as well.
That's, like, 2007, yeah.
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 But I was thinking back on that while you were talking about it, yeah, and I was like, I think this movie and or the original cartoon must have been my first introduction to the series. Because I've read the graphic novel by Eastman and there's another guy,
Laird.
I forget his name.
Laird, yeah.
Laird, yes. But I've read the graphic novel. It's much more darker. And I've read that as an older child, not as a younger child. But I can't figure out which one it was, whether it was the original series or whether it was this movie. But I watched the hell out of them. the one and two, the original movie, and I show it to every subsequent girlfriend I've ever had because they've never seen it, and I love it. That's the thing about this movie too. While I was watching it, I was like, I don't have much to say other than I've seen this 100 times and I fucking love it every time. Like, it's just a good movie. And I had a Donatello action figure. I think I had a Raphael and a Mikey. I don't think I had a Leo though. I think that was the only one.
All this controversy over like people, which turtle are you? You know, which Sex and the City character are you? Click here.
But also back to the fact that there is so many turtle reboots and stuff like that. I was thinking too, it's like as ubiquitous as like as a Pokemon, or what's the other example I was thinking of? Oh, it was a Power Rangers, like you were bringing up earlier when we were talking about tattoos. Power Rangers, it gets rebooted every fucking 5 years. It's like the Olympics or something. And then same with Pokemon, you do the same thing. And then Turtles, same thing. It's still going. I bet you it's still going on probably two different networks.
Well, I mean, like, I actually love, like, there was a Nickelodeon CG animated series. Like, to be honest, the original animated series compared to the ones that have come after it is... it's not great. Like, it doesn't hold up as well as I like want it to. I remember loving that cartoon when I was a lot younger, but it's kind of like, I don't know.
You gotta love it for what it is at the end of the day. It's cheesy, but it did establish, because technically the original source material is a lot darker than what the show was, and everything that's been built off of it is that silly cartoon. Yeah.
The short answer to your question is there is a current animated series called Rise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It's on Netflix, too, I think, but I was going to say, they've kind of taken a lot of the Michael Bay aspects to it, where, like, the turtles are different sizes and a little more, like, pronounced in their...
And Donatello wears weird goggles for some reason.
Yeah. Well, he's a nerd. He's got a microscope or...
Yeah, Raphael has a duct tape shell.
Yeah.
Now, back in our Weekend at Bernie's episode, I scolded myself for what I did in Young Guns, where I watched the second Young Guns immediately afterwards. Now, with Ninja Turtles, I have to follow up the first Ninja Turtles with The Secret of the Ooze. Like, I couldn't even control myself. I was already going in for that movie before I could even stop myself, because I'm like, I have to watch them in a pair. Did either of you end up watching Secret of the Ooze? No,
I didn't know.
I shit you not. I watched these movies probably like a month and a half ago.
Well, as you can tell from what we've already been going on, I think we're probably going to run into some tangents here. But let's officially jump into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie, directed by Steve Barron, who is the director of Coneheads and a whole bunch of music videos like Aha and Culture Club, ZZ Top, Dire Straits, Bowie, McCartney. It's produced by David Chan, Kim Dawson, and Simon Fields. And it's written by, well, Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird, of course, get the characters credit. And Bobby Herbeck, who gets the story screenplay. And Todd W. Langdon. Both of those guys only have like a couple more credits. And we open this movie on shots of the city with a news story happening about all the looting and pickpocketing and stuff that's happening in the city. And we see the silent crime wave in action. I've always wondered why April O'Neil works for Channel 3 in the movie. I've always wondered why they made that change to this for the movie. Four. Yeah. Isn't it 6?
Is it 6?
I was going to say 6, yeah. That's what I was thinking. I thought it was
6, yeah.
I could be wrong. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just like a... I mean, I kind of... Or no, because she gets her job back at the end. I was going to say maybe they had plans for her to like move up. Maybe you have to move up. Like as you move up channel numbers, is it like an increase in status?
Oh, I don't know.
Some sort?
I don't know, but you'd think the lower would be the better. You're aiming for number one, aren't you?
She's not reached her final form.
Slightly different universe or
she hasn't
something.
Evolved fully.
Yeah.
I did read that they did try the yellow jumpsuit and it looked ridiculous. Yeah. So that's why at one point she wears the yellow raincoat as kind of like an homage to that, but they did try a yellow jumpsuit on her and it did not look good. No good.
Yeah, I don't know. A yellow jumpsuit is probably one of those things that could only look good on a cartoon. I just, like, if I just think about my regular life walking around, I don't even know how many people I see on a regular basis wearing yellow to begin with.
Construction workers.
Yeah.
They get yellow jumpsuits.
Other than you need to be high viz.
But... I mean, the yellow jumpsuit works if this is, like, a Marvel movie. And she is yellow jacket or something. I don't know.
Yeah, because of the yellow, yeah. Maybe if Black Widow was in the desert, like her snow uniform's all white. Maybe her desert uniform's all yellow.
Yellow. Bright April O'Neil yellow, though. Like canary yellow.
Maybe more desert camo.
Every time I watch the opening scene of this movie, I always imagine how pissed I would be if I was watching TV on my balcony and somebody just snatched it right in front of me.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for that. To me, it's the most, like, non-subtle. Like, I don't even feel like it's that secret. She clearly... And how could she not see who's running away? Where did they run to? They just...
They're ninjas!
I guess. They're the
Foot Clan! I mean, when they do rob the truck, you do see the truck shaking a little bit. But...
I was really watching that scene to see if I could figure out how they did it. Yeah,
well, I mean, maybe all you can see is what's at the back, so it is quite possible that it's just two stacks of boxes glued together.
Oh yeah, that's
right?
True.
You don't really get any depth of the truck. Yeah. You just assume because the truck's so big that it's full.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a magic trick. I mean, Penn and Teller might have been the consultants on that special effect.
See, I watched this movie just a couple of days ago, and I have no idea what you're talking about. I remember the intro to the second movie much more vividly than I do the first one. The whole, like, mall and the pizza delivery guy getting robbed, and then they save him.
We're only talking about, like, the first 3 minutes. It's just the montage, and it's all voiced over by April doing this news story. Because then the very next scene is April leaving the news station and getting to her van, and she comes across some of these foot guys that are doing some criminal activity. And Raphael comes to the rescue, doing his thing. I mean, I remember how excited I was, because back in the day, they kind of kept what the Ninja Turtles were going to look like under wraps as long as possible. And so it was kind of exciting when he went to this movie, and like this whole first scene is done in the dark, and it's like, oh, man.
What are they going to look like?
When am I going to finally see them?
It's like even the way they end up entering, where they just kind of like jump into out of the shadow.
They do the freeze frame of the shadow first. Like... Yeah.
Just while we're on it, I gotta say, they look awesome. It's crazy to me that a practical Ninja Turtle could look as cool as they do, and it reminds me of the Trade Federation aliens in episode one, and how they have this crazy robotic face that looks so cool, and then fuck it, let's throw as much CG into the film as possible, even though we spent money on these practical effects that are just done in camera. They look so cool, look so fun.
Yeah, but this is no Harry and the Hendersons, though.
I agree with Chris, I recently watched like a documentary about the making of these movies, and I had no idea how the masks were. Like, now that I know, like, there's little slits under the mask, like, I can see them when I watch the movie. But before that, I had no idea. Like, I had no idea how that all that was working. And I think the surprising thing about the movie is, to me, how well the suits hold up. And every time I watch, like, I like the movie that's all animated, like TMNT. I think that's one of my favorite ones. But when I watched the Michael Bay ones, I was just like, if you can do this, do that. Like, yeah. if you can have real life actors be real life turtles, then do that. We don't need these CGI turtles if this is a possibility. Mm-hmm. And it's like a weird, like, going backwards. It's like you use CGI to, I feel like the purpose of using CGI is to make, like, the impossible possible. Mm-hmm. But you have a perfect example of this being possible and very, very well done. I think that's an aspect of the movie that completely, I have no qualms about it. I think it holds up perfectly.
Yeah, yeah. No, and I agree that they're good. I still marvel over that Harry and the Hendersons mask, though.
Yeah.
But you know, I read with the masks, to make the speech a little bit more believable, they did film at a slightly higher film rate than normal.
Okay. Yes.
But only slightly, like, because normally it's 24 frames per second, and they, like, sped up the dialogue scenes to 23 frames per second, and they sped up some of the fight scenes all the way up to, like, 22 frames per second. So it's, like, not a huge increment, but it was just enough to make them look less awkward, less cumbersome.
It's like the reverse of the Little Shop of Horrors trick where just everybody slowed down for it.
Yeah, where Rick Moranis walked in slow motion.
Yeah. But yeah. I also want to say, just also while we're on the topic of these incredible suits, props to those fucking stunt guys for doing flips in these weird latex suits that you can barely see out of. Like, that's awesome. Good job.
I thought that the skateboarding, like, I feel like when you see Donatello skateboarding through the sewer, watching it now, I'm just, and like knowing what problem. I think that's a harder job than it appears.
Oh, like, no.
Whoever is skateboarding in that suit is doing a masterful job, and it looks effortless, but I imagine it was very hard to keep balance.
Yeah, I read one of the guys was pretty claustrophobic, and so between takes he was taking the head off. He said it was that claustrophobic because, like, you just have all these gears and servos inside your, right next to your skull.
That's fucking wild. And yeah, the bricks and shit in that sewer. Yeah, I'm surprised a skateboard wheel could make it over those bricks and just not catch and just throw you. So yeah, props to that. And yeah, that'd be terrifying. I didn't even think about the aspect of, there's just a bunch of machinery just whirring without your control outside of your head, because there's other puppeteers that are doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I also felt that the suits, because I think, you know, it is an indie film, and, like, when you think about it that way, it's like, it could have been so easy to make all the turtles just look kind of the same with different bandanas. Yeah. But watching it this time, I was like, oh yeah, like, I really appreciate how each one has its own, like, the suit itself almost has its own personality. Like, the mask and the face and everything has its own distinct personality for the character.
Yeah,
that was really cool.
Even if they didn't have their colors, you could probably figure out which turtle is which. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, where do the turtles shit? I mean, they're in the sewer, so there's probably not toilets down there, but they're in the sewer.
Well, they just go out into an open pipe.
Yeah.
Just I was going to say that they probably have, like, a designated shit cavern whatever.
See, I'm back to the comment on the suits, too, though. Also, I will say, I think why this movie is filmed a lot in shadows is because of the limitations of the suit. I have a feeling, you know how Secret of the Ooze is a much brighter movie? Because, like, you have that whole, like, hot potato scene with the ooze bottle, you know, and it's, like, this weird, like, pink glow everywhere. I mean, this, like, they keep to the shadows, and I think that's to hide a lot of, you know, the limitations of the suit, but
like, I've seen cosplayers and stuff wearing the suits at like cons or even online, and they're really cool looking, but I will say they don't, I think you're saying Sean, the imperfections come through a little bit more in the light of day. But
yeah, At the end of the day, the perfect way, I think, to make a Turtles movie would be to do the practical suits and then use a little bit of CGI just to hide some of those elements, the creases in the suit or the seams that you can see. Like, you just paste over those and boom.
Yeah, like, I've seen enough behind-the-scenes stuff of, like, Marvel shit where you see that they just, like, they fix just imperfections in the costume. Like, one is on Disney Plus, if you watch the behind-the-scenes thing of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Spoiler alert, though, when Sam becomes the new Captain America, the costume that he had, because whenever he'd turn his head, the neck piece would, like, bulge out. They went in and CGI'd it so that it would stay tight against his neck the whole time. Like, it's just these subtle things that they're doing just to make it look that much better. And so, yeah, sure, use CGI to tidy it up, but don't make your turtles guys with the ping pong ball suits.
So you're telling me that, like, all these six packs and bulging biceps, like, I can't believe anything in Marvel anymore.
No, not really.
No, sir.
No, I mean, they do full CGI costumes if you watch for Green Lantern.
They make everybody younger and shit. Yeah, no, you can't trust it. You can't trust it. You seen Michael Douglas in Ant-Man or whatever?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, or young Robert Downey, yeah.
Well, young Robert Downey is kind of early days. It's kind of ugly, but it's still, yeah, still convincing.
Yeah.
Anyways, back to the Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, once they get to Splinter, you know how we were talking about that one, the one tagline that was, it was like a father-son thing? I think more than ever that came through to me in this watch of this movie.
Oh, new, like, daddy call, it has new feels.
I think becoming a father has, like, I was like, oh yeah, like, there is like a real aspect of this father-son bond in this movie. I think in the past, like, I've always just watched it to be like, oh, let's watch the turtles do ninja stuff and beat up the Fifth Clan and all that. But this time I was like, oh yeah, like.
Now, I will say, I don't know if I always fully buy them as, like, teenage characters.
Yeah, he says they're, like, 15 at one point, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, like when Raph starts getting all dark and moody, like, you kind of want him to have, like, you know, a very deliberate black bangs over one eye and some mascara or some eyeliner on, you know, like, but attitude-wise, they're not necessarily kids. They're just, like, I don't know. I don't know if I always buy them as teenagers. And in the newer movies, I find that they're even older seeming. Like, the CGI turtles are, like...
Yeah, in the newer ones, I would agree. I think in the cartoon, it all hinges on their love of pizza. Yeah. But it's like, in the movie, they don't have time to just be like, everything's about pizza. So you get, like... You get, like, the couple scenes, but I feel like in the cartoon, it's always the teenageness always comes through to their, like, oh, like, we just eat pizza and eat junk food all day.
Yeah, we skateboard and eat pizza and watch TV.
Yeah,
yeah,
and we like the news lady.
Well, let's talk about pizza for a second, because, you know, after we meet the turtles and we meet Splinter, and we find out that Raphael left his Psy behind in that opening fight.
What a dipshit.
They order a pizza. And I still love the scene where the pizza guy is, like, looking for number, like, 28 and a half. Or 28 and a quarter. 28 and a quarter. The whole down here dude scene. But what I find funny about this scene is the fact that the pizza delivery guy is played by the same guy that plays Michelangelo. Because every one of the turtles does get an out of costume cameo in this movie.
Like, cool.
One of them is a foot soldier. One of them is, like, a passenger in a cab. So, but the guy that plays Michelangelo is the pizza guy in the scene. So essentially, Michelangelo is delivering the pizza to himself.
Yo.
He argued with himself to get $3 off because it was late.
Well, he didn't really argue. He just gave the dude $10.
He just stiffed the fucker. Yeah. But, you know, it is Domino's Pizza, so I think that's time for Sponsorship Corner.
We love Domino's. Let's just say it. Not a sponsor.
not a sponsor, but well, not of us, but of this movie.
If they want to sponsor this, though.
Yeah, that's right.
Send that us hit free us up. Dominoes,
dude. I used to like this one, all one word, gmail.com. Anyway, always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is brought to you by the New York Post, Dodge, Pepsi and Mountain Dew, Perrier Water, Ocean Spray, Pan Am Airlines, the video game Narc, the movie Critters, Burger King, Domino's Pizza, JVC Electronics, Huffy Bikes, Bazooka Gum, and of course, Turtle Wax. Plus, a shout out to the fictional WTRL Channel 3, Mario's Diaper Service, and Second Time Around Antiques and More. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Low for a Turtles movie, but the fact that it's independent, it makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's so many things. Like, I agree. I really like that scene, the scene with the pizza guy. I also really, every day, without fail, I will laugh whenever the pizza falls on Splinter's head. There's just something so funny about that.
It slices, it dices. Why do you deliver a pizza that isn't already sliced? Since when?
That's the other thing. Is that an old school New York thing?
Maybe.
I don't know. I haven't lived in old school New York. Not since the last time I lived in old school New York.
In old New York.
So... But Raphael does not want any of this pizza that Leonardo has to cut up. The only times that you actually ever see the swords cutting anything. You know, I read that both Jim Henson, and Jim Henson was the one that created the masks. And this was his last movie that he was attached to before he died.
Aww.
But they both said, you know, they didn't like how violent this movie is. And it's just like, since when? Like, I know it's it's the second movie where they fight with salamis and shit, but you know, like,
it's kind of funny. That's always been a funny thing about the Ninja Turtles to me, is I read the comic book much later, and in that one, like the original one, like they actually will like kill people, but it's weird in the cartoon is you have Leonardo and Raphael with weapons that are only meant to kill. And they never hit I guess the foot soldiers are all, I guess you always have to get around it by having them be robots, right?
Yeah.
But in this movie, the foot soldiers are all actually human, so no one's getting stabbed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the most violent character that you get is Casey Jones. So, I mean, in this scene where Raphael storms off from not wanting pizza, he needs to go think. He puts on his Humphrey Bogart outfit and goes to see a movie, and then ends up stopping the purse snatching, and we meet Casey Jones with his cricket bat, and such classic lines as "cricket, nobody understands cricket." Oh, I love Raph the most in the movie. Like, he's not my favorite Ninja Turtle overall, but I think I love Raph the most in the movie.
I feel like he definitely gets the most play.
Yeah, even though
the most play for sure.
Yeah, even over, you know, Corey Feldman voiced Donatello.
And I think
the voices were.
This scene with Raph and Casey Jones is one of my favorites.
Yeah,
which also, for such a fan of hockey, Casey Jones does not know what high sticking is.
Well,
not when you hit somebody in the face.
That's
with
true.
Your hockey stick.
Yeah,
cricket bat.
That's slashing. That's slashing.
That's slashing. I'm glad we can establish this.
Well, you asked about voices. Yes. The Leonardo is done by Brian Tochi. Michelangelo is done by Robbie Rist. And Raphael, the guy, Josh Pays, is the guy in the suit and the guy that does the voice. I believe he was also the passenger in the cab. But yeah, he plays Raphael and the voice.
Which they all did a tremendous job.
He's the only one that plays the voice of the guy in the suit. And Splinter, he's the next famous voice actor that I know. He's done by Kevin Clash, who is the guy that voices Elmo.
Oh.
Wow. Who for an Asian, I mean, this is funny because this comes up a few times on this show where I talk about the fact that they're recasting voice actors these days for diversity. Splinter, I mean, is an Asian rat, I guess. Kevin Clash is black. So, I mean, at least the black man is getting a role, but he's playing an Asian guy. And for some reason, both the Shredder and Tatsu also have voiceover guys.
Really?
Yeah. Because Shredder is played by James Saito, but he's voiced by David McCharen, because that's a good Asian name. And Toshishiro Obata plays Tatsu, and he's voiced by Michael McConaughey, which is another very Asian name.
So they had white guys speak broken English because the Japanese guys speaking broken English was too broken? Like, what
the fuck?
I mean,
I feel like Tatsu just goes,
does he say that?
Foot Clan, vanish! Or Ninja, vanish! Doesn't he do that too?
He goes, yeah, I'm gonna beat the fuck out of this kid! Boom!
But, oh boy, so when Casey shows up...
What? That's just crazy. Yeah. That's silly.
When Casey shows up, I know I was always disappointed when he didn't show up in the sequel. Because I really like Casey Jones in this movie.
Yeah.
I like him too.
He's got
He does show up in the third one.
He's got some weird vibes.
Was he played by the same person? I don't remember the third one very well at all.
Funny enough, the third one is the one I've probably seen the most, weirdly.
Ouch. Oh, I feel bad for you.
And I loved it when I was a kid, so, I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know if it's the same guy, but...
Casey Jones, he's got some good moments. He's funny. I like the actor. I like his voice or whatever. But the whole... Him, like, forcing April into a chair so he can give her a massage.
Oh, yeah. I was hoping we were going to get to this. Like, that if there's a scene from 1990 that could get a movie canceled permanently in 2022, that was a tough watch.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah. I have nothing wrong with it or whatever. He technically doesn't break, like, definitely breaks a boundary or two, but like doesn't break any rules, I guess, but definitely just like cringy to watch. It's just, yeah, it's just like, wow, what's going on here?
Yeah, their whole hate flirting in general,
yeah,
is a little off-putting. That is true.
Just, yeah, it's just, yeah. Like, ugh.
Which April do you prefer? Do you prefer Judith Hoag in this movie, or whoever it is in the next movie, or Megan Fox?
Well, I prefer to look at Megan Fox, but did they switch actresses?
Yeah, they switch actors. Because that's where I was going with. Yeah, when I was talking about Jim Henson and Judith Hogg, they thought that this was overly violent, and that's part of the reason she didn't come back for the sequel either, is because she was protesting over the fact that it's violent, and it's like, well, the most violent thing is when Shredder gets crushed by a garbage truck. I don't know.
Yeah, this is not a violent movie.
Yeah.
That's weird to me that you would protest, especially because it made so much money. I'd want to be a part of the fucking sequel. Like, damn, yeah. $13 million to $200 million? Done. Yeah. Sign me up. And I'm getting a better contract this time.
I'm pretty sure in Secret of the Ooze, April is played by Paige Turco.
Oh, but yes, that's right. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's Sonya Blade. No? In Mortal Kombat? Am I off?
Bridget Wilson Sampras was one of them. Or are you talking the new Mortal Kombat?
No. I thought she was... I'm wrong. I'm just wrong, guys. It's okay.
It's all good, man. Don't worry about it.
But she lives on Bleecker Street, just like Doctor Strange.
Yes,
and I find that interesting.
I noticed this too. Yeah. I am as well a nerd.
It's an Easter egg you didn't know would be in there. But then April at some point ends up missing the subway, and the Foot Clan shows up, and we get a line that could possibly get this movie canceled, where she's like, "What? Am I behind on my Sony payments again?" That one didn't age well either.
I don't even get it.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what the Sony, like the company? What the?
Yeah, well, because it's a bunch of Japanese guys standing there, or whatever, like a Japanese guy and a bunch of ninjas. And so she thinks the Sony collection agency is out to get her.
I thought you were going the route of like the foot soldier basically like telling her to shut her mouth and then slapping her in the face. But I missed the veiled racism.
Yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I didn't think about it being a Japanese company. That is kind of, yeah, that has definitely aged for sure.
Yeah. Raphael, though, once again saves April. I really think he needs to think about adding pants to his disguise, though. I mean, now he's in a brightly lit area. Before, he was in a movie theater, okay? But, I mean, put on some pants, man.
I don't know if you remember this, but there was a Turtles action figure, and maybe it's from the cartoon, but where they do, because obviously the trench coat is the only thing that could fit over a shell.
Yeah.
And I remember specifically that the action figure came with, like, a mask. That like sunglasses and a mustache that you could put over the turtle's face.
Yeah, I think my brother had that one.
That's what they need here.
Or just any kind of rubber mask over it. She gets knocked out, though, and Raphael saves her. We take her back to the lair, and they want to keep her. But she wakes up screaming over the rat. I like the whimsical music, though, that starts playing as soon as she hops up and starts screaming and finds all these talking turtles and stuff.
Yeah. I'd never really noticed before either that's... I'd never put it together. I realized watching this movie, actually, how little I paid attention to the actual plot when I watched it when I was younger. Because I've always just been like, oh yeah, we move from the first fight, and then we move to Casey Jones' fight, and then we move to the subway fight, and then we move to the next thing that I remember is Raphael on the roof of the apartment building. I forget all the little things in between about, you know, how that's how like the foot soldier actually found out where they live, and they capture Splinter and all that.
Yeah, and that Danny is a dirty, stinking snitch, and but
fuck you, Danny.
I do wonder about the weird like choice of the really grainy flashback footage when we see the Splinter telling his story about the little turtles.
Well, because it's old, duh.
Oh, okay.
What do you mean? It's shot with old camera equipment, duh.
Okay.
Yeah. Glad we got that dealt with.
Like when you try to imagine life in the 30s, do you picture it in black and white?
Did they grow up in the 30s?
No, but I'm just saying, like, so I mean, you know, this is grainy like Super 8 footage from the 70s or something for this 1990 movie. Well, so you know, it's like, so like, when you think about the past, do you think about it in black and white if it's before color was invented?
Right.
Yeah,
I get what you mean now. But I imagine the cameras of 1990 were much better than the cameras of 15 years before?
75.
Yeah, I don't know. I found those scenes weirdly seem so contained.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that and the Shredder story? Yeah.
I love, when they like switch to the black background and he's talking to Danny or whatever about his master Yoshi, and they're just fighting on a black background and you can only see the ground when there's a spotlight on it.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah, just these flashbacks, they were fun. I liked them. I enjoyed them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the stop, I'm assuming it's stop motion turtles, or are those
probably
are those some sort of puppets?
I mean, Jim Henson might have had something to do with that one too. Yeah,
it might have been puppets. Yeah. I could imagine. But
that was the only part of the movie where I thought maybe CGI could have helped here a little bit for this part.
Yeah, especially the little rat Splinter, just kind of gross. Well, the turtles too. Yeah, they're both gross looking.
Well, there was a pitch of this film in the 80s that would have had the turtles played by comedians. They were looking at Gallagher, Sam Kinison, Bobcat Goldthwait, and Billy Crystal to be the four Ninja Turtles.
Sam Kinison was Raph, right?
And it's like,
I think I would have hated that.
There was an R-rated version floating around at one point, too.
Ooh. Well, because of the source material, that makes sense.
Yeah. So when they take April back to her place, I mean, we've got the whole bit where I'd invite you in, but all I've got is frozen pizza. And then all of a sudden, like, Michelangelo comes popping all the way out of the sewer. Did she say pizza?
Boing.
That one still got me. Especially when, like, from down below, you hear one of them say, did someone say pizza?
when they get to April's apartment, I think this was the first time where I watched it and I was like, oh, I actually understand all the references that Michelangelo is making. Oh. Like, I had never seen Rocky when I watched this movie for the first time. And yeah. I'd also had no idea who James Cagney was.
So you're like, oh, Michelangelo's funnier than I thought he was. I thought he was just annoying.
Yeah, I'll say a lot of these references went right over my head.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, not a lot. I'd say it's like the watching The Simpsons when you're little. Like, yeah. Okay. Just, yeah, a lot of those references just go over your head.
Oh, I thought you meant now.
No. Like, like they go over your head, but they're still funny. Yeah. So you kind of laugh at them. But, yeah, I can't say I 100% understand the joke for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is the next part where we get the sweet, like, we finally get the entrance of the Shredder in that kind of, like, Darth Vader-esque shot?
Well, yeah, because Splinter gets abducted, so now we have to meet Shredder, right? I mean, while the boys are at April's hanging out doing James Cagney impressions, we get Splinter abducted. There is that one moment before we get to Shredder where the camera does this weird circling around move while, is it Raphael that's screaming at that point?
Oh, yeah.
Where
yeah.
It's just like, yeah. that was a weird choice.
Yeah, weird cut.
Yeah.
That's like when they find out that Splinter's been abducted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They just zoom in on Ralph and then just Raph and then
get,
just zoom
get right emotional inside. Some get emotional resonance or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. So yeah, we get to see the foot soldiers' hideouts where just like any movie with some sort of place where the kids go. You've got kids smoking cigars and what? A skateboard ramp for some reason, arcade games.
Well, that makes sense. Those make sense. The smoke, that, what a fucking believable effect, first of all. Did they just have a kid take a couple puffs of a fucking cigar?
Maybe.
Like, otherwise, they still had this kid, like, inhale, like, smoke of something.
It was the 90s.
It's just still...
It's a kid's movie where you have a line of, got any cigarettes? Regular or menthol? I don't think my 12-year-old me should have seen that.
I had no idea what that meant.
But, yeah.
Sam Rockwell.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. We get a very young Sam Rockwell there as well. Yeah, absolutely. Totally. Yeah.
Very interesting. Yeah. I remember watching that a couple years ago at this point, being like, oh... Is that Sam Rockwell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we get our training with Master Tatsu where he kicks some guy's ass because he bows to show him respect and he says,
you never lower your eyes to an enemy.
Yeah, no, he showed that fucker right. He took his eyes off of him.
Yeah. Him.
One of the failures of this movie, I think, that I wish they would have done better is I wish they would have actually used Danny to show... I want to know what the progression is from like, to become a foot soldier. Like, yeah. Does everybody get the full get-up? Or, like, what do you have to do to be, like, one of the actual get-the-suit? Yeah, like, what's the separation between everybody? What's, like, what are the levels of this organization?
Does the hierarchy work? Yeah. Like, they're, in the second one, they have their buddy infiltrate it. Raphael and I forget the character's name, but Ernie Reyes Jr. And they infiltrate it, but they still don't really show how the corporate structure of the Foot Clan works.
The corporate structure.
Yeah. But we get the Shredder entering and Danny steps forward because, you know, he's
a little snitch bitch.
But not the snitches don't get stitches in this movie because
that would be too violent. All of our actors would quit.
That's right. I also forgot about this whole like relationship that April had with the chief of police. I kind of forgot about his character.
Yeah, this is another thing that never dawned on my child brain, but I definitely appreciate how she's kind of like getting under his skin more watching it this go around.
Yeah.
I also thought there was more to her relationship with Charles.
Like, oh, the news guy?
Yeah, like, I thought they had more of a romantic thing happening back in the day, but now it seems more like maybe he likes her, but I don't know that she has any interest in him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Definitely not.
But, yeah. We get his iconic line at the end of, "Are you okay, Danny? Are you okay?"
So, April gets interviewed about the Foot Clan on TV, and so that's why she, or that, you know, that's where she ends up calling out the chief of police, but she thanks Raphael. But Raphael is not happy that they're sitting around on their butts while Splinter is out there somewhere, and he and Leonardo fight, because that's what happens in a Ninja Turtle movie, is that Leonardo has to come to grips with being the leader, and Raphael has to be a hothead.
Yes.
But I like when April comes home, though, and, like, Donatello and Michelangelo are watching that Tortoise and the Hare cartoon. Right? You know, like, catch up! I thought it was pretty funny.
That's good.
But, yeah, but Raphael gets his ass kicked.
Yeah.
But luckily, Casey Majorly. Jones saw them from across the street. And then we get the whole middle part of the movie, which, like, is one of those that I don't know if I blocked it out of my memory.
Holy shit.
The whole bit at the farmhouse where it's like, you know, I know it happened, but I just didn't realize it took up so much of the movie. Like, I forgot that it was.
Yeah, I remember a couple scenes from it, but yeah, holy shit. It's like a whole act in and of itself.
How long are they at this farmhouse?
Like 30, 40 minutes.
I think a week.
Yeah, I meant in the movie world. Yeah, is it a week? Because, like, I mean, there's times when it's like it feels like they're, you know, they should be sitting there with a diary, you know, day 45, I'm losing my mind, you know, like it's.
Well, I mean, April is keeping a journal. I wonder if she I never even bothered to check, but I wonder if she has dates on the page that you could look at. I think it's a weird plot mechanism that the only way Casey Jones comes back into the story is that he was just randomly, I'm assuming, like,
being Batman?
Like, just gazing out at the New York skyline and happened to see this Ninja Turtle?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, New York. Like, a giant fucking city.
No, but he's on a roof. It doesn't matter that, like, this rooftop is only, like, four stories, you know?
It's. And he was able somehow to, like, be so far up, looking out far away, and then just how, like, he just knew what this building was.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah,
or maybe it's on fire at that point. I don't know, but still,
no, that's before it's on fire because he's just up there. At first he's just up there like doing ninja moves by himself to blow off some steam, and that's when the Foot Clan shows up. So I mean, when Casey first spots him, he sees just the fucking turtle.
Yeah.
Like, was he looking for the turtle, or was he just, like I said, was he like Batman and just kind of doing a survey of the city?
Yeah, just brooding, I guess?
Well, I have to think he was just doing the survey because he doesn't really know. At that point, I don't think he knew necessarily that Raphael was a turtle or a mutant of anything. He just kind of thinks he's some weird punker.
Like, as soon as he ditched him in the trash can in the earlier scene, this guy was a non-factor to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
That would be my guess.
Yeah.
I have a couple things to say about the farm. First of all, they just fucking throw Raph face down in the tub.
Yeah.
And say, like, sleep it off, bro. And Leah sits on a stool and watches him for what I can only assume is weeks. Because, yeah, she keeps a journal. Casey breaks that chair and then fixes it because they sit on it later. Which also, do you think that chair snap was staged, or was it an outtake that he acted through and they kept it? Do you think that swing balcony chair snapped on its own, or do you think they snapped it?
I think it's an outtake, personally.
Yeah. You think it's an outtake?
You thought an accident?
Because it's just, because it doesn't really have anything to do with the plot. It just ends up kind of being like a weird thing, but it didn't have to be.
Yeah, right?
Funny, right? Like, it didn't have to be there.
It's a comic relief moment, though, in this, like, sad time when they're all, mourning their father being abducted and standing vigil over their fallen warrior.
Yeah, but I don't think Casey's really caught up in that. The farm for Casey is like, there's like two narratives. There's the what's happening with the turtles, and then there's Casey and April and their weird budding romance.
weird budding romance.
I did read that there was a lot of stuff with Michelangelo removed from this.
I could see that, because you do get Donatello. Donatello has his moment with Casey, but still, again,
fixing up the car, yeah.
Mikey doesn't really
anything. And it was because, like, in the original cut, he was the one that took it the hardest. Mm. And so I guess some of his stuff got a little bit dark. I didn't look at what details were, but it was just, like, he was really depressed over it. And I guess they're like, oh, well, this draggy part of the movie probably doesn't need some added depression.
Maybe take out the scenes of Michelangelo cutting himself. I don't think it's going to do too well.
See, there's the teenager stuff I was looking for. Mikey's the emo kid now. I like Chemical Romance now. Leave me alone. I want to go back to the previous scene for a second where they end up having to get out of town because the antique shop is burning down. And I've always wondered why they fall through the floor, but then I realized that they're actually hacking it up with axes. That was something that never landed with me when I was a kid. But they fall through, the place goes on fire, and then they've got a trap door out of the building? Because what antique shop isn't equipped with a trap door out of the building? What is the point of this random hatch?
Well, if you're asking, I'll answer it. It is an antique trap door that they're waiting to sell. But they've installed it so that you know how it works.
I see.
Wow.
Okay. I thought he was going to actually come at me with something real. Like, it was like, you know, this would have been a prohibition tunnel. You know, like something like that. This was part of the fucking, you know, Underground Railroad or some shit. You know, like.
What I gave you was the real answer. What do you mean something real? Come on, man.
Okay, then explain the tunnel behind it.
The man was this eccentric.
The whole tunnel was for sale.
Or
it was
April.
An antique tunnel.
Exactly. That's it. It's an antique coal mining tunnel.
Yeah.
You can buy the whole tunnel.
So I do wonder that when the Shredder is interrogating Splinter and he backhands Splinter, just like absolute fucking bitch slaps him, wouldn't that be more dangerous with a bladed hand? Shouldn't he have taken Splinter's head off with that slap?
There was a scene where he's putting some shit on a foot soldier, and then they put their own bandana on, and that's because I'm sure it's because in the first clip he like puts something over his shoulder or something, and that blade goes so close to that kid's like ear or whatever. And then they probably did a scene where he tried to put the bandana on and probably just like, yeah, pressed his blades against the kid's skull or something or scratched him. Because, yeah, it was weird. I thought the same thing. I was like, those blades are going to cut somebody.
Yeah.
There's probably outtakes of just people with like massive gashes all over their foreheads.
Right? It has to be. Because it went so close to him when I forget what he does, but he put something on his shoulder.
I mean, don't you want him doing like kind of like a Kylo Ren freaking out and destroying the room scene or something? I mean, you know, Master Tatsu does that at one point because he gets so pissed off that they got away. But the thing is, like when he's like absolutely trashing that room, it's like, why weren't you in the fight? You end up kicking all these foot soldiers' asses, but you were just standing there while the fucking antique store was burning down. Obviously, you are talented enough that you should have been their number one warrior out of there. They should have been backing your ass up is what should have been happening.
Yeah, I felt with Tatsu, there needed to be an earlier one-on-one. I guess like he shows up in the antique store, but you never really see him fight anyone.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times these movies work kind of video game style where there's like, you know, bosses.
Yeah.
But they never really have to overcome Tatsu.
No.
I guess Casey Jones ends up beating him, but the turtles never really have their moment against him.
We have our B characters fight and our A characters fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to have the ones off to the side fighting Bellatrix Lestrange while Voldemort is fighting someone more important.
Yes.
Nerd.
Nailed it. We're ramping up the nerdiness. Now, one thing I don't understand at the farm is one of the mornings, you know, to show it's morning, we hear a rooster crowing. And they say the nearest farm is like 4 miles away. Now, Colin, you were used to rural life. How far does a rooster's crow carry? I don't think they had roosters. Because, like, this farmhouse was, like, abandoned for years. So the nearest possible spot there could have been a rooster would have been 4 miles away.
I mean, maybe if like, for some reason your rooster was, like, in between, like, at the furthest reaches of your own property, then maybe it's possible. But not that loud, no, I don't think so. Yeah.
Like, there's some sound effects that we have to stop in movies when logic doesn't make sense anymore. I mean, like, tapping a mic. I can tap my mic right now, and I'm not going to get feedback. It's... You know, like, it's just... But you have to always have the person that doesn't know how to use a microphone for some reason and gets feedback. I've never had feedback on a microphone.
It's one of those things that just fills space and makes it feel right. Like, the feedback, it's just... It's funny. Of course, that's never happened to anybody, but it establishes the character doesn't know what they're doing or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just, it's one of those things that you throw in to fill it, and it would be kind of empty if there was, like, a door squeaking, even though the door didn't squeak, and most doors don't squeak.
Yeah.
Shit like that. It just, it fills up your world, and, makes it more believable in a way.
I do like the game of insulting each other alphabetically.
Yeah, I'm glad they established that it was alphabetically, because I had no fucking idea.
Oh, when they said, what are we on now?
Yeah, what letter are we on? I go, oh, that's what you're doing. I thought you guys were just calling each other people, or calling each other names that people called each other in the 90s.
Yeah.
I was like, are these references that I'm not understanding? Oh, you're doing a silly little improv game. Okay.
Yeah, and they're committing to the bit.
Yes.
So they go back home, and Casey is complaining because, great, first it's the farm that time forgot, and now this sewer. But Danny is hiding there, and April has one of my least favorite lines of, oh my god, your father is going to have kittens.
I don't even remember that line. What?
Yeah. Danny's father is going to have kittens. But we find out that Casey's flaw is that he's claustrophobic. And then we get the line of, you want a fist in your mouth? I've never even looked at another guy before.
That was good.
I mean, it doesn't age well, but I mean, nice and subtle that I didn't pick that up as a kid, but
yeah.
Now I'm like, oh, there's another layer. He misheard him. Okay, I get it.
Casey's got some fun lines in this, I will say. I really appreciated the him calling April Broadzilla.
Yeah.
Never heard that before. That was fun.
Toots.
Well, that's a classic.
I don't think he ever actually calls her by name. Huh. And they've got this love story going on, but sweetheart, toots, like, I don't think he once says April.
He must say it once to establish that they are finally getting along.
They were living in the same house. He forced a massage upon her. That's all you need to know about their love story.
Are you alleging something right now?
No.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
But Casey, because he's a claustrophobic, goes out and sleeps in his truck, and he sees Danny leave. One thing they never really address in Ninja Turtles movies is, like, how heavy a manhole cover actually is.
Yeah, no, those...
Like, especially when Danny leaves. It's like, okay, you can believe that the turtles probably have some sort of special mutant strength or something. But this wiry little fucking, like, 100-pound kid manages to move a manhole cover? I don't think so.
No, those things are heavy.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like the other thing, and I remember hearing stories about when Turtles was really popular, how they actually had problems with kids trying to go down into the sewers and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's like, the sewer is filled with, like, poisonous gas, and, like you can't just survive down there for very long. No. That's why I kind of like in the second movie when they go into the abandoned train station. It makes more sense.
Yeah.
Than living in a stinky sewer.
Yeah. All I could think, too, when they found Danny is, God, that kid must stink. Because he's been living in a sewer for days, and he's still wearing the same outfit. Yeah. But I think, I mean, ultimately, let's just get to the big finale of this movie. We've got the big fight that goes out into the streets and a whole bunch of shell puns because they just still like cracking jokes while fighting, even though it should be a lot more violent.
Well, those are our turtle boys. They love to crack jokes.
But we find out that they are absolutely terrible against the Shredder. I guess this is the violent part because, like, Leonardo actually manages to land a blow and get a cut on Shredder.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Oh.
He's the only one that manages to actually land a blow on Shredder. But then, like, Splinter arrives like he's fucking Yoda in Attack of the Clones.
I kind of wish, in retrospect, I mean, they probably didn't think... I bet at the time when they made this movie, they thought it was just going to be one and done.
Yeah.
They probably weren't planning on sequels and that kind of stuff. But if they had the foresight to think we're going to do sequels, I'm disappointed with the way that the Shredder ends in this movie. Because he's such a badass.
Yeah.
Like, he's so cool. I think he's one of the best superhero movie villains portrayed on screen in this movie. Like, he's such a badass. And then it would have been, I think, like, when Splinter showed up, they should have had, like, the moment where Splinter kind of, like, maybe not necessarily beats him, but just, like, you can tell that Splinter could take him.
Yeah.
But I think the Shredder should have just, like, gone away unscathed. Watching it this go around, like, I know in Secret of the Ooze he comes back, Super Shredder, all that shit. But, like, I like the as soon as they got to the Super Shredder, you lose the cool, like, ninja aspect of Ninja Turtles. Like, you know, everything that they basically stole from Daredevil. You lose all that.
Yeah.
When now it becomes all about the kind of extra mutants and the Super Shredder and all that stuff. I kind of would have liked it better.
And Vanilla Ice.
And Vanilla Ice. I kind of would have liked it better if the movie set up more of, like, oh, this is going to be the never-ending battle of Oroko Saki and Hamato Yoshi.
Well, you do have to appreciate the fact, though, that Splinter just pulls, like, a Mr. Miyagi by just simply dodging out of the way.
Yeah.
All it takes is moving, you know?
There is kind of a Miyagi-Do Cobra Kai aesthetic to the Ninja Turtles story in the different fighting styles of the foot and whatever. I can't remember what Hamato Yoshi's clan is called, but, like, there is some aspect of that that I would like to see in a Ninja Turtles movie eventually.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, at least it shows you that, okay, I guess Splinter does know how to use a nunchuck. So it's believable that he taught Michelangelo how to use his weapon. So there you go.
Yeah.
But now, you know, you don't like the Shredder death, but I will say it provides my favorite moment of the movie, which is when Casey Jones says, oops, a solid, like, 2 seconds before he flips the switch on the garbage truck. I mean, they have to change Han shooting first, but no one went in and took out the oops before he hits the switch. You know, that's Han shooting first so much right there. But April gets her job back. She gets a corner office. You know, that's what it's all about in movies. Gotta have the corner office. Yeah. And they're told to check out the warehouse over on Lairdman Island. I like that little Easter egg.
Yeah.
And then April gets to be aggressive right back to Casey, where she says, you know, will you just shut up and kiss me?
Ew.
So she takes back some of her power, maybe, from the weird-ass massage? I don't know.
Ew. I think all of it was gross. At the end of the day, it was all just weird. Yeah. If they do end up dating, it's going to be just a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah, they haven't set themselves a good foundation for success here.
Not at all. Just weird hate sex. It'll be fun.
And so we end up with them searching for the right word to end this movie on. And Splinter tells them he always liked Cowabunga.
Cowabunga.
I made a funny. And that's, like, one of my least favorite moments. Why? Why is that funny? I don't understand why that's funny.
Because he's our straight man in the movie.
Oh.
He's finally broken and
but
gone.
But Cowabunga's not a joke.
Ah-ha-ha.
It's a state of mind.
Cowabunga. You go, oh, that's it's the dude who doesn't say cowabunga, he's saying cowabunga.
And then the end, and we get our T-U-R-T-L-E power by, was it Digital Underground, I think? I don't know, maybe, I don't remember who sings it, even though I listened to that tape until it wore out. But that is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Now Colin, Chris, on IMDb it scored a 6.7 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 51. On Rotten Tomatoes it has 41% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 81%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like a non-lethal attack with a weapon that has every capability of being lethal. Hit us with some reviews.
All right. Psycho Emerald gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says this movie is awesome. The turtles' designs are amazing and the action scenes are just great. They have fantastic choreography and are just very fun and entertaining. I also love the characters of April O'Neil and Casey Jones, and they are great supporting characters to the Turtles. All four of the Turtles have their own distinct personalities, and the camaraderies between the Turtle Brothers is also very well done, and it makes the characters of Leonardo, Donatello, Raphael, and Michelangelo way very likable. Like I said, the Turtles' designs are great, but so are the costume designs for Casey Jones, Shredder, the Foot Soldiers, and even Splinter, I think, has a great design. I highly recommend this movie. It's a bit corny at times, but that kind of adds to the charm of the movie. The film is very rewatchable for me, and it's really fun and entertaining movie.
I 100% agree on all points. Yeah. Tremendous movie, great costumes. Just the fact that they just stuck with what they look like and what everybody knows what the turtles look like, the like cartoon or whatever, they just stuck to that, and they're like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Except for the jumpsuit or whatever, but yeah, the turtles, Shredder, yeah, they all look so good. Casey's mask, has there ever been a hockey mask that actually looks like that? Because
no.
Then they made it just specific to the comic book. Like, yeah, they nailed it, honestly. They're just like, fuck it, we have good source material, stick to it.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Orchute says 4 out of 5 stars. It stuck to the original Mirage comics, which was great. It was dark, gritty, funny, action-packed, emotional, meaningful dialogue, and good character development. Just like a TMNT movie should have. Better than the 1987 cartoon, which turned the fearsome turtles into goofy, dumb, and stupid comedians. Shredder was also one of my favorite versions of Shredder in the series, although he seemed a bit too much like Darth Vader. Really, the only problem I had with this film is Casey Jones being able to defeat the Foot Clan, whereas the turtles actually struggled. That was what's stopping this from being a 5-star rated movie. But other than that, the movie was phenomenal. Too bad the sequels decided to make the franchise more like the 1987 cartoon. The first film was the best TMNT film ever, and my favorite versions of TMNT as well.
I don't know if I'd use gritty. Like, it's definitely a darker movie, but I don't know.
That's just because there's not that much light on set.
Maybe they meant grainy in the flashback moments. Not gritty, grainy. Yeah.
Well, remember when Leonardo cut Shredder or whatever?
Oh, yeah, there was the one cut.
The last one from Robin Lonert, 5 out of 5 stars. I remember this movie so fondly that I was actually scared of rewatching it decades later because all my good memories might have just been clouded by nostalgia. I'm happy to report that that is not the case. The characters, the action, the humor, everything holds up splendidly. I had a shell of a good time.
Nice. Nice!
I see what you did there.
Nice! Oh, do you... Shell? Dude!
Dude!
Turtles! Holy shit.
It was right there. The whole time, it was right there.
Dude, Shell? Like hell. Oh my god.
Shell dudes.
Is that all of them?
That's all of them, yeah. What the shell?
Yo, wait, you're doing it now? We can just do that?
So, like I said, 6.7 and 81 from audiences and 51 and 41 from critics. Colin, on this viewing, how long has it been since you've seen this movie, would you say?
It's gotta be like a good... More than 5, but less than 10. I'll place it there.
Okay. Yeah. 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 Yeah, I think I'm going to go with at least a decade.
Damn, really?
Yeah.
But on this viewing column, what did you think of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? The movie.
I think for a movie that's like 30 years old, it holds up surprisingly well.
Yeah.
Like other than some like spotty, maybe like culturally inappropriate things that occur in the movie.
One or two.
I think that it could be made today just as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem like dated that much to me. Even in the aesthetic is obviously like it's kind of 90s, I guess, but it doesn't.
That's kind of the fun of it.
It still seems current. Yeah, like it. And I just think it's a good telling of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles story. Kind of like I said at the beginning, I think that, you know, the costumes are all amazing. The Shredder is an awesome villain. I like the story a lot. I really have no complaints about it. Maybe my only complaint would be, like, you could take Danny out of it and do other cool stuff with the other characters.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. I just think it holds up really well, and it's the gold standard of Ninja Turtle movies still.
Yeah.
I think. Like, I don't think it's been topped ever.
No, not even Secret of the Ooze, eh?
No.
Very matter of fact.
I mean, I don't mind Secret of the Ooze, but I still think that this one is better.
Yeah, no, they definitely, I guess this one was too dark, so they had to brighten it up. And so, I mean, it's like the transition from Batman Returns to Batman Forever. That's the kind of tone shift you get with Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen this in a decade, and I mean, I have to say that I still loved it. I still thought it held up. I'm glad it exists. I remember how much of a part of my world it was, and, you know, it did not disappoint. It's, I don't know if I'm wiping away any nostalgia when I look at it, but it's, yeah, I'll look at that 81% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I can get behind that, for sure. Chris, what about you? You're significantly younger than we are, but you're still a Ninja Turtles fan growing up.
This is a fantastic movie. I've said it enough during this whole podcast, but just a fun time. I can watch this like probably 3-4 times a year or whatever, and yeah, just be like, okay, whatever, cool.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you don't fully pay attention to it. I guess the story isn't as intricate or as deep as it could be or whatever, but it gets the job done. Like, it's a perfectly fine story. It's fantastic costumes. I love the voice acting. I love the dialogue. I love everything about this movie.
How would you feel if it was like these turtles in the Michael Bay movie? Like, you know, like the story itself, like look at the second Michael Bay, the Out of the Shadows or whatever it is. And, you know, when they bring in Baxter Stockman and all that sort of stuff, you know, and instead of Token Razor like it is in the fucking Secret of the Ooze, they actually go with Bebop and Rocksteady. So, like, would you like to see these turtles in a movie with Bebop and Rocksteady instead of, like, the mess that was Secret of the Ooze?
If they just fucking sent it, it would be so cool. But also, it's just been
rebooted
so many times that it's just like, let's take a breather on it. Like, I was so stoked on the new Batman, but we just had a new Batman.
Yeah.
But whatever, give me a new Ninja Turtles. I'll watch it. I like the Michael Bay one.
Like, yeah. I honestly think the Michael Bay, yeah, I don't hate the Michael Bay ones.
That's what I would say.
I just like these ones way better. Yes. And I honestly think my main problem with the Michael Bay ones is that I don't like the way the turtles look.
Yeah, they're just, yeah.
I hate the way they look, is what I would say. And I think you could make them better even if you went and put CGI these turtles. Just take these turtles and CGI them into the Michael Bay movie, and I'll enjoy it more.
Yeah, instead of the 8-foot tall turtles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think that has always been my main problem with those movies is just I don't like the way the turtles look at all.
Yeah, no, the other day I like to see the turtles in something.
Yeah, I mean, I will say I don't hate those movies either, but yeah, I would like to see the return of the live action turtles.
For sure.
I have a question for you guys, because we haven't touched on it yet, but have either of you watched Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Next Mutation?
No.
Like the lot it's
oh the series
The series, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation, Venus. Is a series made made by Haim Saban of Power Rangers fame. And it's the one amazing. I love Power Rangers, as you both know. Mm. But you finally get in that series and Power Rangers in Space, the Power Rangers Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles crossover.
Yeah. Oh, really? Well, no, I'm aware of the show and I've seen bits of it, but I didn't watch a lot of it. But I do remember. Yeah, the new mutation.
It's pretty terrible all around. But I mean, if you haven't seen it and you're looking for more turtles to watch, you know, you can go feast your eyes on that atrocity.
Well, there you go. That is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie. And that's our show for this week. Oh, boy, a big thank you to my son, Chris Wells. Thank you for joining us for this episode.
No problemo.
Any last words of wisdom on your notepad? You don't have as many notes as usual. You wrote smaller. You didn't use a Sharpie this time.
Well, like I was saying earlier, it's just with this movie, it's just like I didn't have a lot of things to say about it. I just thoroughly enjoy it. There's not many standouts to me. It's just like all around good. Like to leave on two notes because I kind of wanted to be short and cute with it, but also at one point Casey Jones says, I look like I just called Mike Tyson a sissy. Mm-hmm. And that is still relevant to this day. You heard about him beating the shit out of that guy in the air who was just a dick. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it makes sense. But also, the quote I'd like to leave on is just, cowabunga, dudes.
Cowabunga, dudes. Right on. Well, if you liked that show, why not become a producer? Why not go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become part of our Patreon family, donate to the show, and you get a shout-out just like executive producer Joshua Blum. Or, if you don't want to be a monetary supporter of our show, but want to help us in other ways, go over to whatever app it is you listen to your podcasts on, give us some stars. 5 of them are preferred. You know, give us some stars and a review, help drive us up some charts, help us get noticed, or even just tell your friends and let them know about our show. Say, hey, there's this show that we used to like, hosted by these very handsome and humble guys, and they could use some...
A show that they used to like, or a show that they currently like?
A show that they currently like. Go listen to these guys. You know, get some more earballs on the show for us.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. Find links to all of our podcast episodes, as well as our social media. And if you are so inclined, you can email us at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.